I'm going to introduce Jim.
Well, my name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 19th, 1987, and my home group's a sponsorship group. We meet Sunday night in Chatham, New Jersey at 8:30. It's an awesome meeting. It's a meeting where I know if I bring a new guy, he's going to hear a message of hope and recovery by somebody who's been through the 12 steps, is outlined in the big book, who has a sponsor, who has some experience in trying to help other people get sober. And as a result of those qualifications, he'll hear a message that hopefully is the solution to his problem. I was thinking about the set-aside prayer, and I was thinking about it before the meeting, and I was just listening to the words, and not only do I have to set aside what I think I know, I have to set aside what how I judge other people. And how I judge other cultures and other groups of people. It seems to me that I'm judgmental in many ways, and I'm belligerent, and and that's just another way that you can see me trying to play God. Because what I think the deal I've got, my relationship with God and what I have, what I believe that my mission as a one of God's kids is, I start thinking that that's what everybody's mission is, and I forget that everybody is on their own path, and maybe some work for God, some work for themselves, and I can sort of sum things up what I should strive for, what I've heard Tom say many times, and what I've heard him say is that I try to mind my own business, and the older I get, the less business I have, and that's something for me to strive for. I don't know what anybody else needs to do. I don't know what I should do. One day at a time, I try to be more of a giver than a taker in every area of my life. And with a focus on Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I could, become a missionary in, Antarctica, unless I work with other alcoholics, I'm not going to continue my spiritual growth where I need it most, and that's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I'm taking a new guy through the steps, I can't help but take myself through the steps. The longer I'm sober, the more my life seems to encompass the spiritual principles that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got sober, I worked on Wall Street. And for me, after a while, I had a big dichotomy in my life where I was screwing people during the day and trying to help them at night, okay? And it didn't work out so well. I'm very obsessive, and I can only lie to myself for a little while. And if I'm hurting somebody, it doesn't matter what they think. All that really matters is what I think. If I'm hurting somebody, our literature is pretty damn clear. If I'm not sorry and I'm not willing to change my behavior and I continue to harm people, I'm certain to get drunk. And it's not a theory. It's a fact borne by our experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. And quite frankly, I feel pretty good about myself when I'm a service, even if the person that I'm trying to help thinks I'm a complete asshole. I was telling the story a couple of times in the last month. I remember I was working in the ER, and this guy comes in, and he's having chest pain, and I put him on a heart monitor, and I hook up an IV, and I'm giving him some nitro. I put some nitro paste on his chest. I give him a couple aspirins, baby aspirins to chew up. We're hooking him up, we're doing cardiac enzymes, and his wife comes in, and she brings him a big bag of McDonald's. with French fries and just like a Whopper and all this stuff. And I go, what the hell are you doing? You're killing the guy. What the hell's wrong with you? Now, she was pissed. The kids were pissed. The husband was pissed. But I don't care. You know, I didn't care then. I don't care now because I work for God. Now, when I don't work for God and I'm working for me, I care a lot about what everybody's thinking. You know, when I'm going with my hand out and I want something from you, I'm always worried about what you're thinking. If my hand's not out and I'm there to be a service, I don't give a damn, for the most part. Sometimes, you know, a lot of people disagree with something I'm doing, and I second guess, you know what I'm doing and my original motive. You know what I mean? And those times I'll talk to my sponsor, you know, and what he'll say is, you know, well, your heart's in the right place. And that's a kind way of telling a guy like me that, dude, you screwed up, okay? Get back to work and hopefully you can do something, you know, maybe to clean it up. I'm an alcoholic, and which means that alcohol is a... It is a problem for me. Some people say alcohol is not the problem. My alcoholism, you know, alcohol, if you see me drink, alcohol is definitely a problem. You know what I mean? There's not many people that are going to drink with me more than 2 hours that are going to like my drinking. Okay? I make a mess of things. You know, everything from violence to bodily fluids, just screaming, yelling, I go from crying from rage to giggling, laughing, rolling on the floor to crying. I have the full emotional gamut when I'm drinking, and I apparently hurt people. When I stop drinking, the problems that I suffer internally are far greater than the problems that you suffer externally from my behavior when I'm drinking. So I drink, you know what I mean? When it comes down to it, I feel like it's life or death, and if you got to get screwed so I can survive, because I drink to survive. And I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. The only reason I'm here is because I believe, and I continue to believe, that the relief I can get from this process is much greater than I can get from drinking. And, I don't know anybody who's been able to do this deal gracefully. Not one. I've never seen somebody get sober and then gracefully. Maybe Chuck Chamberlain. And I've only heard stories, okay? I wasn't one of his kids. I wasn't his wife. I wasn't one of his guys. But that's sort of the closest. Everybody else, I've been arrested in sobriety. Been divorced in sobriety, gone bankrupt in sobriety. I've had people threaten to kill me in sobriety. I've threatened to kill people in sobriety. I have been in so much emotional pain in sobriety that I thought I should be committed. I remember one time I was sitting on my old sponsor's couch. And I'm just like hanging on to the corner because I was like ready to fly to pieces emotionally. I could not handle another day. I just couldn't picture the future. I have had my pride leveled in sobriety in ways that, by men and women in sobriety that have said things to me that may have been... they may have tried to hurt me, or they may have just tried to tell me the truth. But to me, it doesn't much matter. It hurts just the same. I've had the government intervene with my pride. I've had National Association of Security Dealers. I had the SEC subpoena me. I've had shit happen in sobriety that has crushed my world to pieces. You know what I mean? Where I just couldn't, I didn't think I could go on another day. I was engaged to this girl, and she got pregnant and then canceled the engagement, and we had picked out names, and we had gotten married, and she picked out names for the kid and all that, went, you know, taking prenatal vitamins and ultrasound and all that. And then one day, you know, she decided to have an abortion. And my reaction to that was homicidal. You know, and it wasn't so much that I cared so much, like I would pretend to care about the unborn baby, but it was really, what were people going to think about me? You know, when I got arrested, you know, and I was facing 5 to 15 years, you know, for securities fraud, at 9 years sober, it wasn't, the only thing I cared about was the New York Post. I was in the New York Post. I was one of 9 people that got indicted. It was a big deal. I was embarrassed. I was human. It was really, what are you going to think about? What are people going to? And when it comes down to it, that's the only problem I have. I mean, I tell you, I was sober 10 years. I remember I'm listening to New Pair of Glasses by Chuck Chamberlain that weekend, and it was like, you know, he said the only problem was pride, and it was like it just hit me. Like it's like, oh yeah, and that's it. That's it. What you think about me is my problem. And my caring about what you think about me is a bigger problem, and that's what I'm going to wrestle with. That's the essence of my alcoholism. Because the more I try to convince you that I'm something I'm not, and the more I keep inside or hide from you or mask who I am, the more I dress up with the Rolex, with the Porsche, with all the shit that it makes me. You know, camouflage me as being just a run-of-the-mill person, the greater the distance is between me and you and me and God. And I'll tell you, at one point I told my sponsor, was like, dude, take that fucking Rolex and put it in the safe. I'm not telling you to get rid of it. Put it in the safe and don't wear it for a month. And it was like chopping my arm off. I was like, But in hindsight, like a week later, it was like, oh, my God, I'm no longer afraid to go to that meeting, to that meeting, to that meeting. You know, and I remember I got rid of my Porsche, and then I was all of a sudden I'm doing commitments in the inner city again. You know, and it was like it was such a bizarre change in my reality that I was like, oh. And I remember when I met Tom, and he has like the cheapest goddamn watch I've ever seen. I was like, it's a Timex that doesn't even keep ticking. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh my God, you know. And so I did. I got a shitty watch, right? I got a cheaper watch than that. You know what I mean? I was like, but I'll tell you, the freeing, you know, 10 years before that, my sponsor said to me every day, he goes, strive to be average. Strive, and I said, and I'm like, who are you talking to? You're talking to these idiots that have nothing. They're not going anywhere in life. They're never going to earn a living. They've never made more than $100,000 a year. They never know what it's going to be like to fly in first class. Okay, we have a whole, you know, I'm a leader. I'm not a follower. Okay, I'm not that guy. I am like the royalty of everything. You know what I mean? I had this idea that because I had this, you know, maybe it's because of my childhood, you know, maybe it's because it was like spending a couple of years at the Fort Lee Christian Home for Children, maybe because we lived in like poverty, maybe, and I had this idea and it's burnt upon me that just make a lot of dough and people are going to treat you right and you're going to be okay, and you know what I mean? And it's just, you know, just... I need that. For some reason, that constant sort of recognition that I'm doing okay because of what I'm wearing, of what I'm driving, of what my education has amounted to, my vocabulary, what books I've read, what the analogies I could make about, you know what I mean? Even into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I mean? And I still find myself, you know, thinking, you know, I'm listening to like, you know, like Eckhart Tolle and Joseph Campbell and Peter Kreeft, I think his name is, and all these guys, and I want to come up with these cool, like, analogies to describe the essence of God and people's experience, you know what I mean? And what it is, I'm just full of shit, okay? I am just full of shit, okay? I am just full of shit, you know what I mean? Completely. And the more I pretend... You know what I mean? The further I separate myself from God, from God's kids, and from God, and the lonelier I get. You know what I mean? The more shit I work for and get in my life, the more I push you guys away, And the better I do financially and you know, politically, and you know, the lonelier I become, you know. And I remember I had this one guy that I was calling, you know, to check in with, and he's like, "It's lonely at the top, isn't it?" And I thought, "Oh my God, somebody understands," you know. And I was like, "How broken and pathetic I am! I have to fight this stuff." You know what I mean? And I need people in my life to help me fight that. Sometimes if I love something, like a possession, and I just give it away. I just freaking give it away because it's I pay such a higher price. I remember my sister, she found this diamond bracelet, a tennis bracelet, right? And this thing's loaded. it's all like half carat diamonds going all the way around, right? And, you know, and she worked in a movie theater and no one claimed it. And so I said, "I'll give you $1,000, you know? And I knew it was worth like 10, 15, 20, I have no idea. But then I was like, then I had it. Then I was thinking about it. And I was like dating a couple girls. And I was like, "Oh, you know, maybe," I'm thinking, you know, and it was like, I was like, "What the fuck, what the hell is wrong?" It was like, I was thinking more about this and what this could get from, you know what I mean? I'm like, I was insane, you know, and what I did was I invited this girl, who was one of the smartest people I ever met, that was in my nursing class. She got the perfect score throughout the whole nursing program. I knew she was a total drunk, right? And I know she wasn't ready to get sober, but she knew I was an AA. So I sat her. I said, "Hey, want to have dinner?" So we went out, right? And we sat down, and I told her my complete story for about 45 minutes. After dinner, I gave her the bracelet, and I said, "I never want to see you again. Okay, I just want, you know, when and if there's ever a time that you just think about Alcoholics Anonymous, I want you to remember." And it just tonight, just this, you know, meal, the bracelet, whatever. If you come away from this feeling, having a good feeling about Alcoholics Anonymous, I think that you, if you don't die from your alcoholism, could actually make a big difference in this world as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not saying you're drunk, but you certainly drank like I did, you know. And I just walked out, and I've never spoken to her again, you know. And I just was like, thank God I don't have that damn bracelet. I was like, I don't want it, you know what I mean? Because this stuff, I mean, some people can handle it. I'm not telling anybody what they need to do. I am, like, really shallow, okay? I'm really shallow. I'm pathetic in many, many ways. I don't want to be away from people. I want to be real. I want every person in my life to be real with me. I want to have, like, I don't want anything. I don't want to not be able to say something to somebody because I'm worried about the financial repercussions of that. Okay? I don't want to, like, not be able to tell you the truth because in something that might actually save your life because you might talk shit about me and I'll suffer, you know, my reputation will suffer. I don't want to live that way because my life on Wall Street was exactly that. I was not real with a soul on the planet because everyone was a mark. And everybody, I was just a move. Just, okay, what do you got going? You know, how is this going to benefit me? And my life sucked. 9 years sober. I wanted to die. I'm facing significant prison time. I had been sponsoring myself for 5 years. And I couldn't see my way out. I had, in the beginning of my sobriety, you know, I was very, very fortunate. I started believing in God. I started trusting in God. I had a sponsor. I started sponsoring guys. In the first 2 years, I had like a dozen guys I was sponsoring. At 2 years, I had about a dozen guys I was sponsoring, and I was on fire, man. I was feeling good. None of them ended up staying sober. Not one single one of them that I know of, you know. And the one kid that trusted me, you know, and the way I look at it now, I wasn't working the steps of the big book because I was like, I was arrogant. I was a jerk. I was really a selfish son of a bitch because me coming into AA, I'm thinking I can make modifications to this process. Okay, I can change this. I can put my twist on it to make it better so you're going to think, so I'm getting something out of it. So you think that I'm cool or special or I got the hip way of doing this, when for 4,000 years everybody died of alcoholism. And then 70-something years ago, people started living with alcoholism because of a very, very specific process. And I had the audacity to change that process for my own selfish motives and means. And I wasn't willing to be accountable to anybody. I wasn't willing to listen to anybody's advice. I was sponsoring myself. But as a result of helping other people, I stayed sober. You know, so long as I'm helping people, I will stay sober. But when I know in my heart of hearts that my action isn't helping and it's hurting, it's something I'll feel the truth. You could see it in my behavior, my demeanor, my lack of confidence, my inability to communicate, the level of fear that just permeates my existence. My first sponsee who trusted me, this guy's name was Jimmy, and I met him. He was at a meeting that my rehab went to in Mendham. When I was in rehab, we got in the van, because it was me, I saw this kid Jimmy there. And the reason I knew Jimmy and the reason he trusted me was because in college I volunteered for Morris County Big Brothers Big Sisters, and he was my little brother. And I took him to his first keg party. Okay? And I set an example for him to emulate. Now chances are the kid was nuts. Okay, yeah, you know what I mean? He was ready to drink at 12, okay? He was like raring to go, you know what I mean? I remember I had this baby blue Lincoln Continental, you know, and he would do like just crazy, you know what I mean? He'd go, you know, we'd drive through Madison, he'd open the window and goes, he'd start screaming, "Help me, help me!" Like he was getting kidnapped or something, you know, just as a joke. You know he's ended up in AA, right? But anyway, he trusted me, and I can tell you, 24 years later, a month and a half ago, he was calling to get somebody to check him out of Sunrise House Detox. Okay? Maybe he wasn't willing to get sober, but maybe, just maybe. If the guy he trusted showed up to him and gave him an unadulterated message of Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe the four kids that he's had in the last 24 years wouldn't have suffered the wrath of his alcoholism. Maybe, maybe not. Okay, but that's something I got to live with. You know, I learned, you know, the hard way that I can't change this deal for anybody, okay? Because it, they might die. They might die because before Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody was dying of alcoholism, okay? And to take that away, it's like, hey, dude, oh, you got an infection? Well, you know, penicillin has worked very well, okay, since we've started using it, but here, let me just rub some dog shit on you, okay? Okay, maybe this will work better, okay? Come on, I mean, the one thing that worked is people stop dying from infection. You know what I mean? Let's try something different. You know. Let's put my twist on it. I know that the dozen guys that I was sponsoring when I had 2 years sober, none of them stayed sober. In the next few years, the guys that came to me, none of them stayed sober. But when I had 9 years and I went through the steps in the big book, okay, and Tom became my sponsor, what happened was within a month, I was sponsoring six guys. I'd taken six guys through the steps because I'm compulsive, okay, because I'm desperate. Like when I feel pain, you know what I mean? I am, you know. Talk about that guy seizing the life preserver. That's me, man. When I'm dying, and it's getting bad, I have a very good idea that I better do something and I better do it quick, you know. And I usually wait to the last minute, so it's pretty desperate. So I started sponsoring a lot of guys, but I still didn't want to, like, listen. You know what I mean? I didn't want it, like, it's like the kind of guy I am in Alcoholics Anonymous is, okay, I got what you're telling me, okay? I got it from here. I'm not going back for advice or some pointers or for some direction, and I'm not going to let him know how I'm doing because he might judge me. He might take the new guy that I'm working with because, you know, he's got much more, you know what I mean? He's much more appealing to the new guy because he's got that much more experience. Instead of me thinking of and actually caring about the guy living or dying and saying, hey, this guy's great, man, you know, talk to him, talk to anybody who's doing great. I want to hoard him. You know what I mean? I was like, I get away from my new guy. You know what I mean? I was like, no, because I wanted a whole bunch of new guys so you'd think I'm doing really well, okay, because I'm back to my pride and my, you know, my ego. And you know, what happened was I took about 50 guys to the steps over the next several months, okay? And I'm compulsive, okay? 4 nights a week, I'm going to Overlook Hospital Psych Unit, right? And there's not a guy that's getting in there that I'm not taking through the steps. You know, I don't care if they're alcoholic, non-alcoholic, you're going through the steps, goddammit. You know, this is what we're doing, you know what I mean? And what I did was I didn't have counsel, okay? And as a result, none of these guys are staying sober. All of a sudden, I'm starting to feel like, hey, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. Because I don't want to do something I'm not good at. Like my brother and I, okay, he got these little juggling beanbags at one point, and he got a book on juggling. And I saw the book, and I said, screw that, let me see it. And I tried a couple times, and I said, screw it. He read the book. He did one beanbag at a time, bounced something down, and then he did one in each hand. And it seemed really stupid to me, so I didn't do it. But he learned how to juggle. Intellectually, juggling makes no sense. Okay, you can't do it. You can't think it through. You got to just follow the direction. And the same thing goes to doing Alcoholics Anonymous, to sponsoring other people, to doing this deal, you know. And when I got desperate again, what I did was I looked at Tom's guys, right, and I looked at Clancy's guys, and I looked at these other guys that really had a bunch of sponsees, because you know what, a lot of people say we're not in the results business, but you know what, I am. I work for God. Okay, my job is to be one of God's, you know, messengers. He's the boss. I'm working for him, you know, and I don't want to screw this thing up. And at least if I do care about what I'm doing and I'm putting my heart into it, maybe I want to learn from people that have a little bit more experience than I do. Okay, besides that, I'm, you know, a perfectionist, and if I don't start doing it and some of the guys I'm sponsoring don't start staying sober, I know I'm not going to do it anymore. Okay, because that's how I crapped out the first time, you know. And what I noticed that these guys did was they limited the guys they worked with to the people that were extremely desperate. Okay, Tom would say, okay, you want me to sponsor you? Meet me at Denny's tomorrow at 7:30 in Glen Burnie, Maryland. Now, there's no easy way there. You got to take like 3 buses if you're lucky. You know what I mean? It's right across from the DMV, so everybody knew where it was. But it's a pain in the ass to get to. But if you're desperate enough, you will get your ass there. Now, the people that showed up, he was willing to take further. You know, Clancy, the same thing. Clancy, you know, some guy goes, will you sponsor me? He goes, come down to my office tomorrow at 9 o'clock and we'll talk about it. You know, because what they want to know if the guy's serious. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know, I'm a brain surgeon, right? And you know, there's no shortage of business. Okay, these neurosurgeons, they're in high demand. They're very, very specialized. Okay, very life and death. Their patients are going to live. Are going to, much like a good sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, say you get 10, 20 years sober and you've been working with guys, you know what? You're qualified. You know, you've been around AA, you've been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have a sponsor, you've tried to sponsor some other people, you've had a couple guys stay sober. You know what? You are very, very qualified. That is something that's not very common in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, you are the elite. we're not going into like Mountainside Hospital and grabbing a resident that can't find his ass with two hands, okay? We're talking about a highly skilled person that can really make a life and death difference. Okay, if you're a brain surgeon and you're going to select a patient and you're going to operate on this guy and this guy has a habit of banging his head on the wall, you probably would pass on that patient. Okay, if the guy's going to bang his head, you know what I mean? If the guy's unwilling, you know, you're going to do a heart transplant or something really complicated, but the guy won't quit smoking. You're not going to take the guy as a patient because you're not going to bet on a loser. You're not going to do it, okay? Because what's going to happen is not only is he going to die, but you're going to waste all your time, your heart, your energy, everything you put into this guy. Because it's not easy doing surgery. It's not easy sponsoring a guy. It's not easy day after day, night after the phone. You know, just it's a lot of effort that I found necessary to put into somebody who's looking to get sober. So I want to know that this guy's serious. I don't want to waste my time. You know, there's plenty of people in Alcoholics Anonymous and in the world that'll help somebody who's not serious. I just can't afford to be one of those people. Why? Because if some of the people I sponsor don't stay sober, my heart's going to leave it, okay? And I'm not going to be doing the deal. I'm going to stop doing it. It's survival for me. Now, maybe other people are more altruistic. Maybe it works better for other people. But my firsthand experience is, at 5 years sober, I got so sick and tired of none of the guys sponsoring. You know what I mean? None of the guys I sponsored, day in and day out, the neighbors are complaining. The kids I'm sponsoring are burning out in the parking lot. They're stealing money. They're spilling shit on my couch. It's like my life's a disaster. None of them are staying sober. Right? At the same time, because I'm working with these guys, I'm shining up. God's like coming out of me. There's guys on Wall Street. Hey, dude, we're going to give you like $50,000. Come here. We'll just write you a check. Just come work for us. Just come today. Come on. I'm like, yeah, these guys want me. There's a pretty girl. Hey, you know, it's like, hey, you're holding a job. Hey, you look like a good kid. You know, it's like, oh, I'm getting interest from all these people. And I'm like, oh, you think I want to keep doing what I'm ineffective at? It doesn't feel good anymore. I stopped sponsoring people. I got to stay sober. And the only way I can stay sober is to keep sponsoring people. The only way I keep sponsoring people is that actually some of them stay sober and do the deal and carry a message, you know, and start doing what I'm doing. And that was not my idea. That was observation from people that came before me. At the time, I saw Tom sponsoring about at least 20 guys that were sober 10-plus years, right, that were all sponsoring 20 or more people. And I was like, how the hell does he do that? And I talked to him. I said, dude, what do I do? He goes, he's not willing. Don't waste your time. I was like, but he's asking me for help. He's like, he's not willing. Tell him to do something. Give him some direction to follow. If he's unwilling to follow the direction, he hasn't done the second half of the first step, pass on him. Or let one of your guys that you're sponsoring work with him to practice. Right? I was like, okay. You know, one of the most difficult areas, which I really disagreed with Tom and Clancy, you know, they're like, dude, neither one of them were sponsoring anybody on medication. I was like, that's cold. And then I was bringing meetings in the psych unit, and I must have sponsored about 200 men and women coming out of Overlook Hospital psych unit over like a 3-4 year period. And about a dozen of them stayed sober, and the only ones that did, you know, were the ones that came off medication. You know, now I'm not saying that's not the deal that I don't, you know, AA has no opinion on outside issues. And I happen to believe that that's an outside issue. My personal experience is that, you know what, if I'm not an accountant, it's a good idea not to give tax advice. I'm not a doctor, don't give medical advice. Okay, if I'm not on psych meds, I can't give medication advice to somebody who I'm not qualified. I don't know how to have a spiritual experience and recovery. I don't know how to do this deal when I'm not on something. If I'm on something, you know, I know how to stay sober drinking an excessive amount of caffeine. Okay, you want to drink some coffee? That's great. Okay, I know what to do. You know what I mean? You know, great. I can't provide experience on something I've got no experience with. That's just selfish. I'm selfish as shit in order to do that. I can't tell somebody else to you know how to do Alcoholics Anonymous with a certain condition that I'm not experienced in. Okay, I It's like if somebody wanted to smoke pot, right, and work the steps, they might be able to do it. But my experience was that I had to stop smoking pot in order to work the steps. I couldn't, it wasn't connecting, you know, it wasn't connecting. And now if somebody wants to keep smoking pot or taper off pot while they're working, I don't know how to do that either. You know, I had to get done, okay, and that's just my experience. I don't, you know, believe me, this is 80% of the world's depression and antipsychotic medication is manufactured by companies headquarters within 50 miles of where we stand right here. Okay, so it's not popular. Okay, every therapist is, you know, indirectly funded. There's the hospitals are funded. You know, this is like a multi-billion-dollar game. But I don't have that experience. And there's some people that are experts, apparently, in counseling people that way and getting them sober. If that's your issue, great. You know, I also know for me that this is a spiritual program. Okay, this is about me getting okay with me. Okay, this is not a program where I'm going to build up my funds to an exorbitant level and then the funds are going to take care of all my problems. Now, there's some people that might have that, you know, sort of ideal, and I used to be one of them, okay? If that's somebody else's deal now and that's what you're looking to get, don't get me to be your sponsor because I don't know how to do that. I failed. That's an area I failed, okay? If increased notoriety or, you know, finances or, you know, whatever is what you believe that's going to conquer your alcoholism, okay, good. Find somebody who's really good with that and work with them. I understand that my experience and my expertise is sort of limited to people that are in a certain condition. And I try not to like get a sponsee and fire sponsees. I think that's I've been a real asshole with that. Okay, I remember calling up Clancy and I told him that I fired this guy I was working with. I go, how often do you fire something? He goes, well, at the time, it was a few years ago. He goes, well, in the last 50 years, I've fired about 5 guys. And I said, well, I fired 5 guys this year. And then, not too long after that, I had a guy call me, and I had sponsored the guy for a number of years, and he said, you know, Jim, you're the closest person I have in the world. Now, this guy called me maybe once every couple weeks. It was sort of like, help me put out the fire kind of guy. It was somebody who was sort of unwilling to follow direction, okay. But I had, you know, I had accepted a responsibility in his life, and once accepting that responsibility, I can't renege. I can't bow out. I can't, you know, I think I can have a much more deep and meaningful relationship with somebody because of where I'm at in recovery. That doesn't. I can't assume that this guy can. And everybody's going to meet me where they can meet me, and for me to sort of bail on it because they're not willing to go where I think they ought to, I have no idea what their capabilities are. You know, so in generally speaking, I mean, I think it's poor practice for me to start working with a guy and then tell the guy I can't work with you anymore. I mean, if somebody threatens my life, or, you know, something like that, you know, I'm okay with my life being threatened, okay? And the standard I have to not work with somebody, I have one standard, okay? If you get pissed off and you argue and yell at me and scream, that's fine, okay? You can even threaten my life, that's fine. Okay, you can attack me, that's fine. You could rob me, that's fine. But what you can't do is you can't hurt somebody else I'm trying to help. That's where I draw the line. That's a condition that I find unacceptable in working with somebody. And that's sort of the line that I find works for me. I've had sponsees threaten to kill me. You know what I mean? This is like, we're not very well-balanced people here, okay? And for me to part with my, you know, to have my pride leveled, you know, and to look at myself and to come to terms with who I am and the things I've done is not a pretty process. This is gut-wrenching. This is, you know, I mean, the tantrums that I've thrown in Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, you know, it used to be not uncommon, you know, for a new guy to kick out a television set. Okay, it wasn't uncommon at all. That was common, you know what I mean? That happened all the time. I mean, new guys, when I got sober, it was like, you know, you throw a chair across the room in an AA meeting. That wasn't, I've seen a lot of stuff happen like that. I've seen people get up, and it's like the topic's going around, and someone thinks you're talking about it, oh, fuck you, and the guy slams the table over, and he leaves the meeting, and he never comes back, you know? I've seen stuff like that happen, so it's not uncommon to have emotional upheavals in members of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, every day I sort of, not every day, but on a regular basis, I learn lessons that contradict rock solid opinions that I've come up with. Okay, where, you know, a lot of stuff that Tom says, it doesn't hit me for a couple of years, you know, so I don't pay any attention. Okay, but he's saying he writes his ideas in the sand. You know what I mean? When I've got an idea and I stick to it and I announce it and I, you know what I mean? It's so much harder to change my mind. I used to sponsor a lot more people than I sponsor today. And what I've found, you know, like what I try to do a little bit different is not to make it like a cookie cutter approach like I used to. It's like, okay, dude, we're gonna meet, we'll do this, boom, boom, we'll run through the step, boom, 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 boom. Okay, you're off, see ya. You know, what I try to do is if somebody asks me to be their sponsor, I wanna know if they're alcoholic. I wanna know if they're sober. Okay, and what that means, you know, to them, what sobriety, what does that mean? I wanna know a lot about them. You know, if they smoke cigarettes, I want to know that. I mean, I'm not going to not sponsor somebody because they, you know, smoke cigarettes or whatever. But what the guy's asking me is saying, "Hey, Jim, help save me from me," which is that's a big responsibility. That is a hell of a responsibility. You know, I mean, the guys, the people that I've sponsored, at some point, if you're smoking cigarettes, I'm going to probably say, "Hey, are you going to quit? What's the deal with that? Are you going to stop smoking?" You know what I mean? If some guy's like obesely overweight, I'm going to say, "Dude, man, not another sandwich. You know, maybe you want to look at that area of your life. Maybe you want to, you know, consider that you work for God, and how effective are you going to be carrying a message or help doing God's work, you know, speaking, you know, through a little hole in your larynx." You know what I mean? Is that the best way to carry a message? You know, maybe, maybe not. Okay, you know, if you're like obese, you know, and your food's out of control, maybe you want to look at what's causing that. Maybe you want to do that. If your family life sucks, if your kids hate you, if you know, let's talk about it. You know, I'm not the therapist, but why don't we talk about it? This is your deal. This is your life. How serious, you know, is your life? You know, if somebody has kids and you know, I'm sponsoring them. Do I want to help them in their relationships with their kids? Do I want to, you know, take the principles that I'm learning in Alcoholics Anonymous that I utilize with patients or family or sponsees or, you know, through making amends? Do I want to utilize those same principles in every area of my life? I mean, I think it's important to have sponsees in my life. You know, come over. Let's hang out, dude. Let's go to the mall. You know what I mean? Let's go shop. Let's talk. Let's see. You know, I'm going to see how the guy orders food. You know, it's like, dude, she just works here. What the fuck? You know what I mean? Why would you say that? It's like, oh, you know? I was like, you can say whatever you want to say, but I'm not going to eat with you if you're going to be an animal, you know? This is most, you know, people that are, you know, sort of civilized a little bit don't talk to people like that, you know? And I think that's my responsibility to encourage people to utilize what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in strong sponsorship, but I also believe in weak sponsorship. I believe that, you know, when somebody is not ready, not all that willing, it's not my job to beat them up and to try to make them ready. There's no better way of letting somebody get ready, but let them alone with their self-will. You know, I can't beat anybody up as well as they can beat themselves up. You know, it's not my job to harass anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I could say something, I could say it, and the, you know, the reason, if somebody's off track and I'm trying to help them stay sober, I will say something, and I might say it a few times, so there's no mistake, because when I get the phone call, okay, that the guy hung himself, I don't want to feel guilty. Okay, it wasn't too long ago, you know, I got a call, fucking guy hung himself. It was 6 months ago, 7 months ago. Dude, I mean, I've had half a dozen of those calls in the last 20 years. It's like the guy's working with some guy and he's dead. You know, one guy stepped in front of a train, another guy hung himself, another guy OD'd. I mean, I don't want to walk away from it not knowing that I gave it everything I had. You know, there's nothing worse than being sober and feeling like a jerk because I didn't do everything I could do and avoiding a funeral. And I haven't done that since I was 2 years sober. You know what I mean? I haven't done, I 2 years sober, I should have gone to see the guy in the hospital. I should have gone to see him. I didn't think he was going to die. You know what I mean? I didn't think, you know what I mean? And I'll tell you, since then, you know, this is how we learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. I learn from my mistakes. I don't learn because I'm, you know, because I, you know, Tom says something that sounds like a great idea. I try to listen. I try to surround myself with people that have a lot of experience. I try to take it in, but it doesn't always resonate. You know what I mean? It resonates in hindsight. You know what I mean? It's like, you know what I mean? When I'm in pain, I might listen more. I might even follow direction that I think is ridiculous because I'd rather have somebody else to blame. Okay? That a lot of times in Alcoholics Anonymous is like my life turns into like a shitstorm and like I get direction. I'm like, you know what? Based on where I'm at, all these people think I'm a jerk. At least if I do it his way, when they go, "You're a jerk," I go, "Nope, he is." I can just shield it off, you know? And my experience has been is that when I find somebody to give me direction that is more loving through their actions, my life improves significantly. I gotta let go of my head. I gotta let go of my ideas. I gotta, like, regardless of how long I'm sober, I don't have this together. I don't have it together. I don't have it together. And when I think I do, it's a disaster is looming, okay? And the other shoe's going to drop, you know? I'm not an expert at anything, you know, including Alcoholics Anonymous. I have some experience. I'm not afraid to step up. I'm not afraid of going to jail or dying for what I believe in. I am afraid of not helping somebody when it's inconvenient. You know, I think most of the spiritual growth I've experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous is going the extra yard when it's most inconvenient. When it's financially inconvenient, when it's you know, buying a meal for a guy when I can't afford to eat myself, driving somebody 2 hours out of my way because the guy needs a ride or he needs some place to stay, or and I've got like an early business meeting in the morning, The number of times that has benefited me financially is astronomical. The number of times that I've had business opportunities come up because I've, you know, because God takes care of the finances. God absolutely takes care of the finances. And, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I am. The more I exert myself in the financial area, the broker I get, the more I exert myself on a spiritual plane of being a service to God's kids, the better my finances have been. The more I hoard God's resources, the quicker those resources disappear. The more I, you know, like in the big book, they talk about the miner, the gaunt miner, and his pick strikes gold, strikes gold, and he's just feeling like, you know, this is fantastic. But the only way to keep it is to give away the entire load, time and time and time again. And it's so counterintuitive. It's so, you know what I mean? It's so counterintuitive. I can tell you, as a result of practicing Alcoholics Anonymous and the principles in Alcoholics Anonymous and staying active and trying to be sponsored and to talking to people that, you know, I don't want to talk to when I'm afraid, I've made it through some very, very difficult, scary, scary situations in sobriety. And I've got some relationships in my life today that were not possible at any point in my life. I feel pretty good about who I am as a person. I'm not an angel, but my experience has been is that even like a jerk like me, as long as I set my life about God's business, I've seen it with other people. I've seen the biggest jerks. So long as they're on the same path, they get better and better and better, and God takes care of, you know, just fixing them up. I'm convinced that God will do the same for me. You know, so regardless of what your past is and who you are and what you've done, if we're on the same path and you're trying to help people and I'm trying to help people, I would rather hang out with you than somebody who's extremely noble that doesn't do a goddamn thing to help anybody. Okay, because I know where they're headed, okay, and I know where I'm headed, where other people that are setting their life about God's business. I mean, it's just simple principles, very, very predictable, and, you know, sobriety. I don't know if that was a typical Alcoholics Anonymous talk. It was certainly a talk I've never given, I'd like to thank Dave for the coffee with a shot of espresso, and Lenny for the Red Bull. Thank you.
All right.